The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Good morning. My name is Mandy Winders, and I'm a member of this congregation. And on behalf of our Reverend Dave Dunn, our guest speaker today, our own Mr. David Krober, and our Alex Beach, our music director, and my fellow worship associates and our technical team, I want to welcome you all this morning to the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North congregation, which we lovingly call Human. Human is a liberal faith community with a mission to nurture our spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. No matter who you are, who you love, or where you are in your spiritual journey, all are welcome here. Next Sunday, August 7th, we're going to have a UU the Vote initiative right after our service. We'll be getting together for lunch and a letter writing party to entice reluctant voters to show up and exercise their right to vote and use their voter superpowers in November. We hope you can join us. Be on the lookout for an article in the August newsletter on the subject and the announcements. And now let us light our chalice. Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of the human spirit touched into being by the mystery of life. It is the fire of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of justice, and the fire of faith. It is the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life. And for our call to worship this morning is just going to be the quote that's in the front of your program if you want to look at it. This is a quote by Richard Rohr. We grow by passing beyond some perfect order through an often painful and seemingly unnecessary disorder to an enlightened reorder or resurrection. This is the universal pattern that connects and solidifies our relationships with everything around us. And now a reading from Searching for Sunday by Rachel Held Evans. There are recovery programs for people grieving the loss of a parent, sibling, or spouse. You can buy books on how to cope with the death of a beloved pet or work through the anguish of a miscarriage. We speak openly with one another about the bereavement that can accompany a layoff, a move, a diagnosis, or a dream deferred. But no one really teaches you how to grieve the loss of your faith. You're on your own for that. It became increasingly clear to me that my fellow Christians didn't want to listen to me or grieve with me, or walk down this frightening road with me. They wanted to fix me. They wanted to wind me up like an old-fashioned toy and send me back to the fold with a painted smile on my face and tiny symbols in my hands.
Yeah. So, good morning. As Mandy introduced, I'm David Krober. I'm a member here at Human. I was telling somebody that I was going to be doing this talk this morning, and they said, oh, no problem. You could talk for hours about that. So I promise you, 17 minutes, 17 minutes, don't get anxious. So I'd like to start off with a little thought experiment here. I want you to imagine that you are living in a perfect house. You love this house. Maybe you were raised in it, or it's where you started and raised your own family, or maybe it's one you built together with your spouse. Over the years, you've developed incredible friendships with your neighbors. You've shared life and community, experienced great joys, and were comforted when you suffered losses. As time has passed, some rooms may have changed function. A kitchen nook became a kid's study area, or a child's bedroom became an office. You periodically repainted or replaced carpeting. You upgraded appliances, cleaned out closets and garages to get rid of old stuff and make more room. Maybe you've even done some minor remodeling, finished a basement or added on a screen porch, or updated the bathroom. It has been a safe, stable home for many years. One day you're sitting in the family room and you find yourself staring at a crack in the ceiling. You make a mental note to check that out, then you head to the kitchen for a snack where your teenager announces that they just don't want to live in the house anymore and they're moving out. You keep noticing other problems, more cracks, a leak in the basement, rooms feel too small, the air conditioner just can't seem to keep the house cool anymore. You're not able to overlook these issues anymore. They're nagging at you, and they need to be addressed. So you talk to some of your friends and neighbors, asking if they're experiencing similar challenges with their houses, but they're all content, no worries. So you start doing some research on your own. You watch a few home improvement shows on HGTV, pick up some magazines or books to get ideas, poke around in the attic and crawl space. The more exploring you do, you begin to realize that this is not going to be a simple remodel. There's some significant structural issues that need to be addressed. That ceiling crack, the walls are settling. You call a few contractors that have been recommended by neighbors, but none of them get it. Everyone keeps telling you that there's really nothing wrong with the house. You're just dissatisfied, and all you need to do is a little patch and paintwork, and it'll all be fine. Okay, so I think we've sufficiently set up the metaphor here. The house is your belief system, the neighborhood is your faith community, and you've hit a point where you realize they no longer work for you. Welcome to deconstruction. This may be a new term for you, so I'll start by setting some context. For the next several minutes, I'm going to try to explain the process of deconstructing Christianity, primarily through the lens of my own personal experience and the authors and speakers who have been my guides. This is not going to be a bash the fundamentalists screed or a detailed exposition of, you know, all that's wrong with Christianity, but more a description of the journey. So, you know, why should you care, right? How does this matter to you as a Unitarian Universalist? So first of all, odds are you know someone who is going through this, wrestling with some serious doubts about their beliefs. It may be a family member, a friend, a neighbor, or a coworker. It might even be you. Hopefully this talk will give you some empathy into what they are experiencing and enable you to be a compassionate listener. Second, human can be a place where people on this journey can safely ask questions, explore their faith, and experience belonging in a faith community that encourages rather than stifles spiritual diversity. All right, so what is deconstruction? The call to worship that Mandy read today, and it's in your program, is a quote from Richard Rohr, who's an American Franciscan priest, author, and speaker. He points out that there's a universal pattern of order, disorder, and reorder that is present through metaphor in most of the world's great religious, literary, and philosophical traditions, described by Joseph Campbell in his classic Hero's Journey archetype. Rohr observes that each of these deeply rooted myths in its own way is saying that growth happens in this full sequence. To grow toward love, union, salvation, or enlightenment, we must be moved from order to disorder, and then ultimately to reorder. So order, disorder, and reorder. Order is that strong container for the first half of life. It's marked by tradition, loyalty, and authority figures that give us the necessary security, predictability, and ego structure that we need to establish ourselves in the world. The destination is reorder, which is a more expansive, non-dual, and inclusive spiritual space that transcends and yet includes what has gone before. Disorder, or deconstruction, is that phase in the middle when, again quoting Richard Rohr, we will be deeply disappointed by what we were originally taught, by where our choices have led us, or by the seemingly random tragedies that take place in our lives. There will be a death, a disease, a disruption to our normal way of thinking or being in the world. This phase of disorder is marked by a form of cognitive dissonance when you become aware that you can't reconcile your belief system with the reality of your life, when your ordered worldview fails you and comes crashing down. It's not something that you intentionally initiate, something that you want to do. It's something that you feel compelled to do. I'm convinced that no one can remain in a continued state of cognitive dissonance and keep their sanity. You must either change your actions and behavior to align with your beliefs or adapt your beliefs to align with your reality. Deconstruction is the process of beginning that latter stage. Disorder is also not a place that you want to stay camped out in forever. Back to the metaphor, imagine living in a house that is partially demolished and in a continuous state of remodeling. Or to use another metaphor here, Georgia 400 with lanes perpetually under construction. Yeah, that's no way to live. Rohr again here. Permanent residence in disorder is rather tragic and certainly unhelpful. It tends to make people negative and cynical and usually angry. This stymied position worships disorder itself as though it were a dogma. So what does this look like for a Christian, particularly for someone who is steeped in evangelical or fundamentalist tradition? How does it start? What do you do? And this is where I'll draw more heavily from my own personal experience. A religious deconstruction may be triggered by one big thing, but I think often it is cumulative. And I'm going to switch metaphors on you here. Like rain-soaked tributaries feeding into a great river, where floodwaters keep rising and eventually overflow the banks and surge through the community, engulfing everything in their path. When the levee breaks, I have no place to stay. These feeder issues may include challenges with church doctrine or theology, such as biblical inerrancy, the virgin birth and resurrection of Jesus, original sin, a literal hell for unbelievers. There's plenty of problematic doctrine to take issue with. Or it could be a feeling that God has failed you in some way. The loss of a child, a job, a marriage, a life-altering disease or some other suffering, or perhaps a personal crisis or failing. Sometimes it is being wounded by a church community, a scandal, spiritual or physical abuse, being shunned because you kept asking too many questions, or because of a divorce or a child coming out as gay. And a more recent development, the identity stacking of political issues and agendas with religious beliefs, Trumpism, abortion rights, racism, gender issues, or immigration. Whatever the issues, you find that when you read your Bible or pray or attend worship services, you don't feel comforted or connected spiritually anymore. As the questions build and the waters rise, you search for answers. You may start by going to see the pastor or a church-sanctioned counselor or spiritual director. Sometimes this is enough. Now, here's a book by C.S. Lewis or John Piper or Billy Graham. You know, mostly old or dead white guys. Or you find a different denomination or a church community that is more relaxed about certain things. You know, hey, the Methodists ordain women as ministers, or the Episcopals will recognize gay marriage, or this congregation is racially diverse and active in social justice. But often this too is not enough. No matter what the question is, the answers always come back as thinly disguised Christian apologetics. You know, it's good that you're asking these questions, but the answer is Jesus. As you explore further, you're amazed to find that there's a global community of church refugees and expatriates out there, including a diverse network of authors, speakers, bloggers, and podcasters who are thoughtfully and provocatively discussing these same questions without simply trying to shut down the dissent. There are former pastors like Rob Bell and Brian McLaren, who are reimagining Christianity that can be vital and relevant for our world today. Here's Catholic friar Richard Rohr, founder of the Center for Action and Contemplation in New Age, New Mexico, who's talking about Christianity's rich tradition of mystics and non-dual thinking and meditation practices. And there's powerful female voices like Rachel Held Evans and Diana Butler Bass, people of color like Austin Channing Brown and Xavier Pickett, who free the teachings of Jesus from 2,000 years of patriarchy, whiteness, and empire that have buried just how revolutionary this man's message was. My own deconstruction journey began with, what do I do with the Old Testament, especially the stories in Genesis and Exodus that to me were obviously myths, and other passages that looked a lot more like propaganda than history? I love reading, studying, and teaching the Bible, but the more I worked with the text, the Baptist doctrine of divine and therefore inerrant authorship became harder for me to believe. Interbiblical scholar, college professor, and author Pete Enns, whose books enabled me to find a way to take the Bible seriously without reading it literally, acknowledging that it is an ancient, ambiguous, and diverse collection of literature, not a love letter to me from God. And I actually had someone say that to me during this process. Pete's podcast, The Bible for Normal People, introduced me to scores of authors and speakers who greatly influenced not only my own deconstruction, but also the slow rebuilding process of reorder. There's a warning. Deconstruction comes with a cost. For Pete Enns, it cost him his teaching position and tenure at a conservative Bible college. For Jen Hatmaker, a popular evangelical blogger and social media influencer, taking a stance in support of gay marriage and LGBTQ inclusion in the church, alienated most of her audience, lost her publishing contract, and had her books pulled from Christian bookstores. When Christian recording artist Jennifer Knapp came out as lesbian, she was dropped from her label. For just about everyone, it means the loss of identity, community, friendships, and sometimes even family relationships. The certainty of God is in control and always wants what's best for me is gone. There are many parallels with the stages of grief because it really is a form of dying. So on that cheery note, let me close with a couple of observations and lessons learned. Deconstruction can happen quickly, particularly if it turns into a total demolition project. But the rebuilding process is slow and nonlinear. You need to be patient as we go through this. Second, there's really no one correct path through disorder. Often you don't even know where you're headed. Everyone's story is unique, and while there are many helpful mentors and resources out there, ultimately it is a personal journey that you must navigate yourself. Third is, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. In my case, I didn't want to lose the good things about Christianity, and there are a lot of ways that the church impacts our communities and the world for good. In his book, Velvet Elvis, Rob Bell provided a helpful metaphor for me. He challenges the idea of faith and doctrine as bricks in a wall, instead suggesting that we view it as a trampoline, where doctrine and theology are like the springs on the edge that can flex and give or be replaced as needed. Fourth, and kind of a corollary to this, is staying connected with other Christians that I knew. So friends, family, people I love, while at the same time recognizing that there's some topics that are best avoided or where I need to silently code switch. Thank you, Kim, for that analogy. And look for the heart and spirit of what they're trying to say to me. Love truly can bridge the differences if you can agree to disagree, but many relationships do not survive. Fifth, sharing my story along the way has also opened new relationships with others on the path, often in unexpected places, and helping them actually helped me work through my own evolving beliefs. And then finally, finding a new faith community, a place where you can experience connection and openness and the freedom to explore and expand without being judged, is essential. For me, this has been human. It's a core part of our mission and values. I've gradually come to the realization that reorder is not a task to complete, nor is it a new set of doctrines to replace the ones I used to hold. It's an ongoing process where I continue to move concepts and beliefs among three buckets: things I believe, things I don't believe, and then a big bucket in the middle, things that are still the mystery. And that's okay, as is the fact that friends who are still firmly rooted in the certainty of their beliefs often don't or can't understand where I am. In his book, Faith After Doubt, Brian McLaren describes this stage of faith as harmony, an integral and holistic state where we realize that everything belongs, all are connected, all life is sacred. Doubt is a necessary part of life, a portal from one stage to another. And faith is a humble, reverent openness to mystery that expresses itself in non-discriminatory love. Thank you.
And if that's all, we'll go ahead and extinguish our chalice. David, if you'll help us. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
So actually, for our benediction, I just want to repeat the quote I read to you from Brian McLaren there at the end. Everything belongs, all are connected, all life is sacred. Doubt is a necessary part of life, a portal from one stage to another. Faith is a humble, reverent openness to mystery that expresses itself in non-discriminatory love. I think that's something we all aspire to. Thank you all for coming today.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.